have new developments to discuss in terms of wiretapping, a new travel ban, and a proposal to replace Obamacare. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions about the politics of all three issues for our guest expert this hour. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk about each of those issues one at a time, starting with wiretapping. After the news, we'll go to the new travel ban, and after the second newscast this hour, we'll go to the new GOP proposal to replace the Affordable Care Act. And again, wonder what your reaction is to all three of these issues. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Kevin Hardwick, an associate professor of political science at Canisius College in Buffalo. He is also a Republican Erie County legislator. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So, as mentioned, let's start with wiretapping. What was your reaction to the claim by President Trump that former President Obama had wiretapped his phones during the campaign?
Well, I thought on its face it was absurd. I watched a lot of the Sunday morning shows, Meet the Press, This Week, and so on. And I kind of felt sorry for many of the surrogates they put out there because it was kind of pathetic trying to defend it. The Democrats who appeared on those shows, it seemed like their talking points, their playbook, was to say that this was a distraction from the Russian connection in the campaign. But that in and of itself, if that was the case, it didn't make much sense to me because he seems to have tweeted himself into a corner there, because this just focuses attention back on the whole Russian thing, and it gives everybody an excuse to say, okay, let's have a special prosecutor or at least a big blue ribbon select Senate committee similar to Watergate on the whole Russian affair.
I have to admit, I thought the same thing. Why, if you're trying to distract from the talk about Russia, would you talk about wiretapping to see if any Russian connection existed? But yeah, we were yesterday anyway, all talking about wiretapping more so, right?
Yeah, and you know the whole thing with Jeff Sessions, I think, would have eventually blown over if he was trying to distract people. He still had a decent week, you know. He had a nice speech last Tuesday night. He was getting rave reviews, and then he does something like this. It didn't make any sense at all to me.
Yeah. So as we know, President Trump did not offer any specific proof or evidence to support his allegation. He went straight to Twitter early on Saturday morning and said that. You know, Obama was behind this. What does it do President Trump any good to make big claims like this without offering any proof?
Well, I think eventually there's a drip, 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 and he can only make so many of these claims before he starts losing his hardcore supporters. Now, that hasn't happened. I mean, you think about the claims he's offered over the course of the last couple of years. I mean, I go back to the Lee Harvey Oswald thing with Cruz's father. I mean, that was just so ridiculous at its face, but he got away with it, and his hardcore supporters stuck with him, and it didn't make any difference. This is another, you know, absurd claim, but we'll see what happens. Certainly, he's losing a lot of the people in the middle. I think his advisors feel very uncomfortable about this. I mean, you look at some of them on TV, it almost looks like a hostage video. I saw Sean Spicer yesterday try to explain this or try to dodge it. I got to believe it's going to be another good week for Melissa McCarthy on Saturday Night Live.
Well, you mentioned the surrogates trying to defend this on TV. Senior counselor Kellyanne Conway said that President Trump is the president and has information and intelligence that other people don't. How likely is it that Trump is right about this?
I think it's very unlikely. I mean, there may well have been something there. There may have been some tapping. of Russians, and somehow they picked up someone from Trump Tower on a conversation. I mean, that may be true. We'll have to see. And that's one of the reasons I think Congress will now have to really get serious about investigating this. But in terms of Obama ordering Trump himself to be tapped, I mean, that's Nixonian, and that's why the laws were changed after Nixon in the late 70s. So that didn't happen.
Well, let's suppose just for a second that President Trump is correct and that his phones were tapped by the Obama administration, or Trump Tower was tapped to see about this. How big a deal would that be?
Well, that would be huge, and that would get President Obama in a lot of trouble. And then his surrogates would have a tough time explaining his actions. But I think the chances of that are very, very, very remote.
Help me understand. Shouldn't, if the Trump Tower was wiretapped in, there need to be some probable cause and a judge saying it's okay to do this?
Certainly, yeah. They mm-hmm. would have had to either go to a regular court where you would get mm-hmm. a regular wiretap order, or the so-called FISA court for the foreign intelligence surveillance stuff, a special judge. And all indications are none of that happened. I mean, when you saw the reaction of Director Comey of the FBI yesterday, I mean, he went, for all intents and purposes, ballistic wanted the Justice Department to come out and issue a statement saying that this did not happen.
You know, I actually saw some people wondering if the FBI Director Comey was in some political hot water himself for making those statements.
Well, he's been in and out of political hot water for the better part of a year now, so I don't think that would be anything new for him. Certainly, yeah. I mean, you know, when you came out and you made those statements, you're not going to make the president happy.
Yeah. So how damaging, you know, if President Trump made these unsubstantiated claims, turns out they're not substantiated, how damaging is that to him, or will most of the American public just say, oh, well, that's President Trump?
Well, you would think it would be damaging, and you would think he would lose some supporters, and eventually people would grow tired of this, and some of his hardcore supporters would drop off. But even if they don't, it's still damaging. And the reason it's damaging is because you and I now are talking about this. You know, we're talking about this allegation. And he really needs to get down to business. I mean, he's got, you know, another 22 months or so to accomplish what he'd like to accomplish in his first term, because you know, presidents really need that first 2 years, and if they're going to do anything, they're going to do it then. I mean, you go back and you look at Reagan. That's when Reagan did Reaganomics. It's when Obama did Obamacare. I mean, after the first 2 years of Obamacare, I'm sorry, after the first 2 years of the Obama administration, mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't a lot there. His signature achievement was Obamacare, and after that, of course, he lost power in Congress and was hamstrung to do anything else. Same sort of thing happened to Reagan, and you know, it probably will happen to Trump. Although the dynamics of the Senate elections in a couple of years may be favorable, he's probably going to lose some seats in the House, maybe lose control of the House of Representatives, especially now. I know you want to get into health care later, but especially now that he's taking on health care, he's going to lose. You don't win. You don't win with health care.
Well, we will get into health care later, but let's take a listen to what President Trump said in this pre-recorded interview on Fox News. He essentially accused former President Obama, of basically trying to derail his presidency with the ongoing Russia storyline. Let's take a listen.
I think that President Obama is behind it because his people are certainly behind it. And some of the leaks possibly come from that group, you know, some of the leaks, which are really very serious leaks because they're very bad in terms of national security. But I also understand that's politics, and in terms of him being behind things, that's politics, and it will probably continue.
Is President Trump correct with that?
He could well be. He could well be. I'm sure that there are people who were in the Obama administration who were no fans of Donald Trump, who were stockpiling all of this information and leaking it out slowly to the media. That's certainly plausible. But to extend that and to say that the president of the United States ordered wiretapping on a presidential candidate is, you know, just goes beyond the limit there.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will turn our attention to the new travel ban. President Trump signed the executive order for a new travel ban, restrictions on travel from now six predominantly Muslim countries. So what do we think of this new travel ban? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a political analyst about several issues in the news this morning. We just got done talking about the wiretapping allegations, President Trump accusing President Obama of wiretapping him during the campaign. Now we will talk about the new travel ban that President Trump signed yesterday. And in our next segment, we will focus on the new Obamacare. It's not Obamacare, it'd be Trump Care. It will be the bill, the proposal to replace the Affordable Care Act. We welcome your thoughts, your questions, your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So how do you feel about President Trump's new executive order on refugees and travel? Does this one make more sense, or do you still think it is discriminatory? We welcome your thoughts and questions on this one as we talk with our guest, Kevin Hardwick, an associate professor of political science at Kinesis College in Buffalo, New York. He is also a Republican Erie County legislator. So let's, Professor Hardwick, talk about this this new executive order that restricts travel from six and not seven primarily Muslim countries. Your thoughts on whether this one's a better one than the first one?
Oh, I think so. I mean, the first one was rolled out so ham-handedly it was doomed for failure from the start. I mean, in effect, this is the president's second mulligan in a week. Last Tuesday night, he gave the speech, which I think got rave reviews, relatively speaking, especially after his very dark inaugural address, which a lot of people did not like. So I thought he did a much better speech there. And I think this travel order is one that's going to pass muster with the courts. And it's one that I think more Americans will get on board with, not because the substance is so much different, but because the rollout is so much better. And you won't have the chaos at the airports that you did after the first one was rolled out, and those terrible optics on television with all the protesters at LaGuardia or was it JFK, one of the New York airports. It just was bad from the start.
Yeah. There will be, the executive order is similar to the first one, except it does not include Iraq, and that's because we don't want to discourage people from helping the U.S.
I think that was it. And you know, again, you talk about the optics of the first one. You had some of the interpreters who were helping, who were vital to our effort there, being denied entry into our country. You know, being trapped and facing an uncertain future back in Iraq if we sent them back. I mean, that just didn't go over well with anybody. Again, this one is a lot more thought out. More people were involved in its drafting. Certainly everybody knows what it involves now before it was issued. And I think you'll see it accepted much better by the American public. And most importantly, I think Republicans will be on board with it. And that's important to the president and his relationship with the Republican Congress, because he needs those members, those House members, those Senate members, to back everything else he's doing. And if they support this proposal, I think he's going to have a much easier time of getting other things done that he would like to accomplish in his first couple years.
Travelers with current visas and green card holders would be exempted from this travel order. That was another, I guess, bad for optics when somebody who was just visiting their family at home couldn't come back, even though they were green card holders.
Yeah, that was a terrible, terrible piece. And you knew that the news media were going to focus on that. And why shouldn't they? Those are great human interest stories. And they were everywhere to be found. You know, you had people in the air when this thing was issued, and the president's people came out with a lame excuse. Well, if we gave them notice, then the bad guys would jump on an airplane and get here. Well, you know, that wouldn't apply. I would assume wouldn't have applied to the people who were already in the air, but it did. And the problem was no one at the airport. The people in charge of implementing that original travel order, no one had any idea what it meant. And there seemed to be no one in Washington willing to give them a consistent interpretation of it. So there was that chaos, and it was just awful. And it reflected poorly on the president. You know, one of his strengths last year during the campaign among his supporters was, hey, the guy's a businessman. He'll run this place more efficiently. Well, that whole scene kind of belied that notion that he would run things, you know, like a business. Any business that ran that way would be out of business in no time at all.
Democrats, including Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District here in Madison, are still calling this a Muslim ban, since the 6 countries affected, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, are predominantly Muslim. Do you see that Muslim ban label sticking with the general public, or do you think most people do not see it that way?
Well, I think most people will see it for what it is, a ban on people coming from those countries where there is a concern that you might have Islamic terrorists coming from. Does that make it a Muslim ban? You know, I'm not sure that it does. Certainly, it's aimed at Muslims who are terrorists. And I think people understand that, and they will call it what they want.
Richard on Facebook seems to be frustrated by those who refer to the travel ban as a Muslim ban. He says it was 7 countries, now it's down to 6. And if it was truly a Muslim ban, then why is the country with the largest Muslim population not on the list? Indonesia was cited in 2010 as a country with the largest Muslim population. According to the World Atlas, which Richard shared, Indonesia has the largest Muslim population in the world. Well, I guess your reaction to this, Professor Hardwick, so people like Richard are frustrated with the description.
I think Richard makes an excellent point. I mean, if it were a Muslim ban, we would be denying just Muslims, not people from particular countries, because there are other countries with Muslims and they're free to come in. Again, it's a ban aimed. There is a Muslim aspect to it. There's no question about it, because it's Islamic terrorists that the president and people who supported him last year are most fearful of. So it is aimed at them, and it's aimed at countries where they're more likely to come from.
If you have a reaction to the new travel order, the executive order that President Trump signed yesterday, the travel ban number 2, you can call us. We have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We are talking about this new executive order during this segment. Coming up in our next segment, our last segment of this hour, we will talk about the new Obamacare replacement, or at least the proposed replacement. We are talking with Kevin Hardwick, who is a Republican Erie County legislator. He is a professor of political science, and we welcome your thoughts and questions for him. Well, the ACLU, though, is saying it's going to file suit against this new travel ban. Again, claiming that it discriminates against Muslim, that it is primarily a Muslim ban. What do you think is going to happen there, Professor Hardwick?
That's tough to tell. I would assume that they would try to go after the Ninth Circuit again, because they have been more favorable to the ACLU and its cause here. I don't know. It's certainly going to be more difficult to stop this one. In the end, even with the original ban, it was thought that if this goes all the way to the Supreme Court, if it's not dismissed, if it's litigated all the way to the Supreme Court, that the ban probably would stand up, because the president does have extraordinary powers when it comes to foreign affairs, the things beyond our borders, and this being one of them. But this one, again, was narrowly written. It was written to address the criticisms of the initial one. So I think it's, you know, if I had to lay odds, I think it's better than 50-50 that it will hold up. But there's always that, you know, people are going to sue, and you never know what the courts are going to do.
Yeah, it does affect all refugees, though, right? Refugees are not at least temporarily permitted entry into the United States.
Yeah, there's a temporary hold. They're calling it a pause, and again, it goes back to the president when he initially. This was a year and a half ago when he originally called for a ban. Then he was calling it a Muslim ban. And he said something to the effect that, you know, we're calling for a temporary halt until we can figure out what's going on. So, yeah, there is a pause here.
We have full lines now. Steve in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I have a question for the caller, and I'll ask and hang up. I'm curious why the ban is only on these countries when all the terrorist attacks that have been caused by people from other countries in the United States came from other countries that are on the ban list, like Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, and why those are countries that Trump has businesses in, but these are countries that he doesn't. It seems to be favoring countries that he has business with, even though there's terrorism that comes from those countries.
What's your response to that, Professor?
Well, I think Steve brings up a good question. It's certainly a question that a lot of people have brought up. I would only say that I think that they're trying to be prospective. They're looking ahead to countries where the next problems will be coming from. And the Obama administration apparently had some hand in identifying these countries. You know, you can go back to 9/11 and you say, well, they were all, you know, from many of them from Saudi Arabia. But that was, you know, we're a few years, we'll be celebrating the 20th anniversary of that. I suppose if you go back far enough, you could say, well, should we let the Japanese and Germans in because we had a problem with them in World War II? Obviously, that would be that would be ridiculous. So I think that the president and his people are looking forward. If they are, exempting countries where the president has done business, then obviously that's a conspiracy worth looking into.
Next, we go to Dan in Janesville. Hello, Dan.
Hi. I am just curious as to the president banning these countries seems to give our true enemies ideological ammunition, saying America is keeping us out. And I don't know if that is the best way to actually keep our country safe.
How about that, Professor?
I am sympathetic to that point. I mean, as you announced, in addition to being a professor at Canisius College in Buffalo, I'm also a member of our county legislature here in Erie County. And I'm as a Republican, I go back to I can remember Ronald Reagan, and I was even in his presence for a speech he gave in 1984 when he was running for re-election. And I oftentimes show his farewell address to my students, in which he talks about America in the shining city on the hill, and all the refugees in effect coming here, and it's a great great idea. We're the shining beacon. People want to come here, and this puts us on the opposite side of that, you know. And it can be used as propaganda for the people who hate us to say, hey, look, they don't want your type there. You know, you ought not like the United States of America. And so I'm very sympathetic to that point.
Thank you, Dan. I'm also curious about the president was upset when the courts stopped the first travel order and said that bad people were pouring into the country because of that and that we were at risk. But then it took more than a little while to get travel order number two, and the implementation is going to be another week out or so, I believe. So isn't that contradictory, Professor Hardwick?
Well, certainly it is. I mean, again, he was worried that people on planes would somehow, couldn't be trusted because they somehow, jumped there when they heard about the travel order. They jumped 5 miles into the air onto the planes. That was ridiculous. I mean, people coming to this country, have been in the pipeline for a while. So I think the current approach, go steady, do it right, is the one that they should have followed initially. Again, I call this his second mulligan in a week. And he got the first one right. That speech, again, last week was much better than the inaugural address. And I think this mulligan on the travel order is a much better version than the first one.
Well, indeed, they put off the signing of the second travel order after that speech, at least reportedly. So the good vibe from that speech could stay a while.
So he could bask in the glory of all the praise he was getting after that speech. And that wasn't a bad move. But again, if you're right, and I think the point you're trying to make is, well, if it was so important that we get this thing in a way to stop the bad people from coming in, you know, you wouldn't take into account that political consideration. And obviously they did. And for all we know, there could have been other things. I mean, there could have been some reservations on the part of Homeland Security or someone else that caused that delay in the rollout. We don't know. We weren't inside, and I guess we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. But the suspicion is that they were talking about releasing it last week, and they put it off so they could enjoy the praise from the speech.
Yeah. Do you have any comment on the timing of it being rolled out then on Monday, the day? Well, it wasn't the day after, but the Monday morning after the wiretapping allegations.
I don't know what the plan was, but if they did move it up, to get the wiretapping back to page 3 or page 4, I think that was a good political move. Again, I have no inside information. For all I know, they planned to do it on Monday anyway.
Yeah.
But if they hadn't and they moved it up from a political standpoint, I wouldn't criticize that because they would, you know, they are going to win with the public, or at least the part of the public that they care about, most care about, which are Republicans who have some say in whether their Republican congressman and their Republican senator return there. They're going to win on this. Republicans are going to love this. And it's the sort of thing that...
Oops, maybe we inadvertently had our guest drop off there, but it's okay because we have news coming up next anyway. And we'll get our guest back on the line if we lost him. And when we come back from news, we will talk about the Republican bill that was unveiled yesterday that would repeal Obamacare and replace it. And we'll talk a little bit about what it involves, and we will wonder what you think, what reactions you have to the Affordable Care Act replacement. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We have been spending this hour talking about some of the biggest issues of the day. We started with the wiretapping allegations. We just talked about the new travel order or travel ban. And now we are going to talk about Obamacare and the new Republican bill that would repeal Obamacare taxes and penalties, but keep some subsidies, the repeal and replace legislation. What do we think of this? Will this go over in Congress or not? There's already some Republicans are saying no way. Well, what do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are very happy to have with us a political scientist who has been able to cover all three of these issues with us, Kevin Hardwick, Associate Professor of Political Science at Canisius College in Buffalo, New York. He is also a Republican Erie County legislator. And so let's talk about repeal and replace Obamacare. What strikes you about this legislation, Professor Hardwick?
Well, it just came out last night, so obviously no one really has a fantastic handle on it. But I noticed that as soon as it came out, I started getting Facebook alerts from the AARP. I recently joined the AARP. Uh-huh. I honestly don't look as old as you know that, but and they told me that I've got to oppose it because of the age tax in it. This is just a start. I mean, Republicans are the dog that caught the Obamacare car. They've been running for years on repeal and replace, and it's easy to run on repeal and replace because there's enough bad about Obamacare that people can get upset with it about. But once you start talking about replacing it, once you start talking about crafting your own bill, you're going to run into trouble. I mean, just ask the Democrats from 93-94. I mean, in 93-94, that's all we talked about was health care, and then it was under Clinton. And at the end of the day, nothing happened except they lost control of Congress. And then in 2009, 2010, that's all we talked about was Obamacare. And eventually we did get something done, unlike with Clinton. But it cost the Democrats, again, control of Congress. It was that shellacking in the midterm elections that the President Obama so famously quipped about. And, you know, Republicans, it's going to be very difficult to make people happy. You're certainly not going to make everyone happy, and you're going to lose a lot of votes in the process. So it's like good luck with that.
There a lot of the town hall meetings that we've seen where Trump critics have attended, mainly Democrats. One of the primary issues was don't repeal Obamacare or don't at least, take away my health care. And that was a big issue among Democrats. Is this an issue that is popular with the majority of the American public to repeal Obamacare?
Well, certainly. Yeah, I think Trump ran on that.
Yep.
When you don't get into specifics, it's very popular. And you want to repeal and replace it. Yeah, everybody's for that. But then you talk about what you replace it with. Repealing is the easy part. Replacing, everybody could be for that, or a lot of people are for that. It's once you talk about the replacement, that's where you start to lose people. It's very complex. And there are going to be winners and losers. And as always, the losers are going to scream the loudest. Back when Obamacare was being crafted back in 2009, 2010, the town hall meetings were on the other side. It was Democratic town hall meetings with people saying, don't do Obamacare, you know. We're seeing the mirror image of that now.
This plan, the Republican plan to reshape the Affordable Care Act, kills the mandate. It says you don't have to buy health insurance. Is that going to work?
Is that going to work? It's going to be good. Make it, if you don't have everybody buying the health insurance, especially the younger people, I mean, that was part of the problem with Obamacare, even though they had the individual mandate and there was a penalty for not complying with it, a lot of the younger people said, well, you know, the penalty is easier to pay than the insurance itself, so I'll just pay the penalty. And that really messed up the insurance companies, and it drove their actuaries crazy because they were trying to figure out how to make things balance without those young people paying those high premiums. You can eliminate the individual mandate, but you got to figure out a way to make healthcare affordable, the insurance affordable, and you know that's very difficult to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. The Obamacare was, I mean, it was the Affordable Care Act, and it really didn't make health care more affordable. It made it more available to people, but did that make it more affordable? Healthcare is still, you know, going several times past the rate of inflation, and it's going to be difficult to craft something that actually does make healthcare affordable without some sort of rationing of healthcare. And once you talk about rationing of healthcare, then you get a lot of people mad at you.
Yeah, and this did just come out last night, so nobody's been able to digest all of it. But according to a report from NPR, the bill would offer tax credits refundable in advance to people with incomes below $75,000. Those credits will be lower in many cases than the subsidies that are currently offered in the ACA. So subsidies remain, but lower. And I was seeing Republican reaction from some, especially smaller government Republicans, saying that they didn't like that very much.
Yeah, I mean, there are people on all there are people who are not going to like this for diametrically opposed reasons. It's not something that's easy to win. You know, you had the president come out, and there's that clip of him saying, we're going to have fantastic health care, it's going to be affordable, it's going to be better than that disaster that's Obamacare. And that's nice, and everybody would be for that. But when you start talking about the details, you're going to find out that you can't have it all. And so that clip of his is going to be, you know, his version of Obama's, if you want your doctor, you can keep your doctor thing. And it's just going to prove to be not the case. And he's going to get criticized for that. He's probably going to lose seats of Congress for that if people take it out on Republicans in the midterms.
Yeah, according to the House Ways and Means Committee Chair Kevin Brady in a statement, our legislation transfers power from Washington back to the states. We dismantle Obamacare's damaging taxes and mandates so states can deliver quality, affordable options. As a Republican, do you like this transfer of the power back to the states?
You know, I'm conflicted there because in general, I do believe there's a lot that the states can do. And you see some states, you know, the idea here is that in American federalism, one of the good things about having states and their sovereignty and their ability to craft their own policies is that you get innovation and something, you know, some state may do something differently than others and it works. And then everybody jumps on board. We talk about the diffusion of innovation. You know, someone comes up with an idea and everybody crafts it. This way you don't have a one-size-fits-all sort of thing. So in general, I like the idea of letting states experiment. But in that process, many people are going to lose what they have, and they're not going to be happy. So it's tough. It's a very, very difficult issue, and it's an important issue, and the president is going to find that out. I'm sure he's found that out already. That's why he needs some victories going forward to build up some political capital. I think he hopes that the travel ban is a winner, which we talked about earlier. That might give him some political capital to use on this health care fight, because this is going to be a battle, and I don't know if he's going to be able to win it.
Lori in Johnsburg, Illinois is with us. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for having me. My comment is this bill is a travesty against the middle class. It does nothing to address the high cost of health care. Where I live, a physical used to be paid out at about $300 per year. It's now being paid out at $1,300 a year because of a Republican bill passed 2 years ago that allows them to charge in-hospital rates for things like clinical. So when you have costs rising like that, you cannot make health care affordable. Right now, we get a premium tax credit. Our insurance still costs us $15,000 a year for my husband and myself. Without that credit, it would be $25,000 a year.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. It's complicated, isn't it, Professor Hardwick?
It is, and in fairness, to the president, the current president. I mean, Obamacare really didn't make health care affordable. It made health care insurance affordable, more affordable than it would have been, but there were all sorts of subsidies and someone was paying for it. The actual health care costs have still been skyrocketing. I mean, I think you almost have to talk about serious health care cost containment. You almost have to go back to the mid-1980s during the Reagan administration when they I think it was around 1983 or 1984, when they switched to a system. They brought in these so-called diagnostic-related groups, these DRGs, and based health care reimbursement for Medicare and, I believe, Medicaid on those DRGs as opposed to, you know, fee-for-service. There you had some serious cost containment, but there were some negative externalities. You had the phenomenon, you might recall, of drive-by births when hospitals mm-hmm. wanted to get, you know, new mothers out of the hospital as quick as possible and have turnover. And then you had to fix that problem with laws banning that or guaranteeing so much time in the hospital. And you had hospitals trying to cut all sorts of corners because it was a different ballgame. The rules were different. But that was serious health care cost containment. We haven't seen anything like that recently, I don't think.
We have less than a minute. What's next for the Trump administration, Professor Hardwick?
Well, I don't know, but I imagine you feel like I do. I mean, you're expected to stay on top of this, as am I, and I do a lot of these interviews around the Buffalo mm-hmm. area, and of course I talk to my students at Canisius College, and it's been an exhausting year. It used to be so much easier to talk about the issues of the day because there were not so many of them.
Every day there's a new one, and maybe two or three.
And two or three, and you know, North Korea's throwing up missiles, and there's environmental regulation rollback.
That's
there's
right.
So many things you could talk about every day that you can't get to, and you're worried. I won't speak for you, but you're probably like me, and you're worried that someone will ask you a question, and you'll have one of those Gary Johnson Aleppo moments.
You know, I'm going to hope that you'll come back sometime and talk with us some more. Thank you for being with us.